Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, this is Brandon Barash, and thank you for listening to Stardish Radio.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Stardish Radio on the Blog Talk Network. Today is October 15th, 2008. I'm your host, Joanne, and a reminder, please make sure you download and rate the shows when it is over. The call-in number is 347-945-5423, so make sure you participate with us tonight on the phone as well as in the live chat room I have going. Tomorrow, Matt Borlenghi will be back for part two of his first show at 10 o'clock Eastern Time. I have my buddy Tony on the line. Hi, Tony. Tony, you there? No, he's not. Okay. Let's move on here then. Tonight's guest is a rock rap sensation who hails from London, England, and I must say is smoking in every sense of the word. His new single with Joel Madden from Good Charlotte, L.A. Girls, is just as hot as he is. And please just welcome Mams Taylor to Stardish Radio. Mams? Okay, are we having technical difficulties here? I think we are. Okay, if you can hear me, hang it up and dial back. Okay, I'm sorry, guys. Something must be going on with the switchboard. Give me a few minutes, and we'll get it taken care of. In the meantime, let me play a little Mams Taylor for you. Tony, are you on the air?
Yes, I am, Joanne.
Okay, wonderful, wonderful. Let me grab Mams. I'm sure he's back by now. Mams, are you there?
I am, Joanne, and thank you for that lovely introduction.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm sorry about the technical delay there. Sometimes
no problem.
Blog Talk switchboards go crazy. Say
yeah,
hi to my friend, Tony.
Hey, hi, Mams. How you doing, man?
Good. How are you, Tony?
Doing fine. Doing fine.
Good. Good, good to
well,
meet you.
I want to thank you for taking the time to join us tonight.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, anytime. I am in love with LA Girls. I am in love with it.
I'm glad to hear it. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. It is such a hot track, and the video is just as well. I love it, love it, love it. Tell me quickly about the retreat you just returned from. What was that all about?
It's a silent retreat, and you go in silence for 10 days and nights, and you're not allowed any verbal or nonverbal communication with anyone else there. It's in the middle of the desert, and you kind of have no choice, you do like 10 to 12 hours of meditation every day, so you kind of have no choice but to face yourself, your fears, and things that you may have suppressed throughout your lifetime and all that kind of stuff, and it was an awesome experience.
Wow, that sounds amazing. I don't know that I would be able to handle not talking to myself.
Oh, I mean, half the time I was there. Half the time I was there, I was plotting to escape. I even went as far as planning out my escape route, so I could just go over and use someone's phone to call my girlfriend. I was going crazy.
Oh wow, but that's good. So it helped you in what way? What do you think you learned from that?
It's actually called Vipassana, which is a Buddhist meditation, and it's open to all. It's non-sectarian, which I like. You know, I don't like anything that has sort of divisions within it. And I think the meditation technique is very scientific, and it just brings up all kinds of stuff. It reduces your day-to-day suffering and misery, you know, that we all have for stupid mm-hmm. stuff. And then when you sort of step out of the picture, you realize how irrelevant and arrogant we are to sort of assume that our problems are the biggest problems in the whole world, you know, and you step out
right.
of it. And it teaches you a lot about non-reaction. So you mm-hmm. just, rather than, you know, you could be having an argument with your neighbor or something, and they might say something to set you off. It sort of teaches you just to not react to it one way or another. And
right,
that
right.
way it causes a lot less destruction in your day-to-day life. So it's
mm-hmm.
a pretty valuable method.
Wow. All right. So tell me a little bit about you and how, and describe to me your journey and how you ended up in this business. Because from what I understand, it was a little bit of a rocky start for you.
Yeah. Well, I left home when I was about 16, and I didn't get along too well with the old man and all that kind of stuff. So I took every odd job you can imagine, from selling roses and in the street and stuff, setting up a flower stall, and to being a bouncer at a nightclub, to doing door-to-door sales, to DJing.
Mm-hmm.
And I got recruited in a boy band when I was pretty young, and I had, you know, lots of high hopes back then and everything, and I got so turned off by the business and just thought it's all so, you know, there's all kinds of bad things that it opened my eyes to, and I just I needed to make some money, so
right.
I became a bouncer and accidentally got into business, which, you know, I never really was that into,
mm-hmm.
which is real estate and stocks and stuff like that. And then when I got
right.
to LA about 4 or 5 years ago, I got that craving to get back into the music business. So just been
mm-hmm.
working with a lot of artists, producing, writing, and now coming out with my own album.
I know, King Amongst Men. Tell me about the title and how you came up with it and what it means to you.
All right, well, when I came up with it, I was in quite a different state of mind to where I'm at now. So I think initially it was as arrogant as it sounds,
mm-hmm.
you know, and some of the content on the album will illustrate that, you know, because it's about having a good time, going to clubs and hanging out with lots of different beautiful women and all that kind of stuff. And there's a lot of that, you know, fun stuff in there. But
right.
then there's also some stuff with a little bit more depth in the album, which reflects on my growth in my personal journey. And it's, you know, so it's pretty eclectic mix, different artists and everything. And the title itself, initially, like I say, it was because I felt like I was a king,
mm-hmm.
just doing this and you know, sort of having the kahunas, if you will, to follow my dream rather than be stuck in, you know, in the business world and doing stuff that I didn't really find very rewarding,
right.
other than financially. And mm-hmm. Now I find that it's a good thing I chose that title. I just believe that I don't compare myself to anyone else. I learn from all kinds of artists, and my taste in music is very, very diverse. But I think everybody can be a king or a queen in their own right. I think everyone has a king and a queen within themselves. And
mm-hmm.
once you really look within and you sort of have the guts to pursue whatever it is that your heart wants you to do, that's where you get in touch with the divine or the king or queen within yourself. And
right.
and that's what it means to me now.
That is a very deep explanation, and I'm
that's
very
deep.
Impressed.
Yeah, that's deep indeed, man.
Yeah, I rehearsed that a couple of times. No, I'm just kidding.
let me see. Now, being that you did leave the home at 16, I mean, that's a rough age to be at home, to be out of the home. What advice would you give to a 16-year-old now that comes up to you and says, "Mams, I really love what you did, and I love your story, and now I'm doing it too"? What would you tell a 16-year-old now on as far as advice goes?
You know, Joanne, I would probably say, as far as advice, if they were in a similar situation to myself, I'd tell them
mm-hmm.
to be less pig-headed, and if they were, as far as inspiration goes and all that kind of thing, I mean, I make mistakes continuously, so I don't know if I'm the best role model in certain ways, but all I can say is that from my experience, everything I've done has, including many mistakes I've made, has led me to understand and become the person that I am now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's I'd say to follow one's heart, and if from the age of 16, people can start looking within rather than being so influenced by the outward exterior world and the material world, which, you know, it's fine to have, you know, nice things and all that kind of stuff. It's great to be motivated by that. But to truly find success and happiness and all that good stuff, it really comes within, and that's something that's taken me a long time to learn. So if from the age of 16 anyone can focus a little bit more on themselves internally,
right,
true success will come to them. So,
right. So now, 4 years ago, you're out in L.A. What did you do? Whose door did you knock down to get into where you are now?
You know, I got here 4 or 5 years ago, and I was freshly divorced, and I was just like a kid in a candy store. You know,
right,
all I wanted to do was date as many hot women as I could, and I did, and it was a pretty shallow sort of existence, and it was awesome. I had a great time, don't get me wrong, but it got old pretty quick, and it taught me, you know, it sort of put me on the path that I'm onto right now. So, yeah.
So
but in terms of going out and you know, going to all the nightclubs and all that kind of stuff, it's inevitable in LA. If you go to the, you know, the top nightclubs and all that kind of stuff, and you're going to rub elbows with people in the industry, in music,
right,
and in movies and all that kind of stuff, and
mm-hmm.
it's just part of the LA kind of Hollywood lifestyle. And then there's some people that you take to and others that you don't, and that's how I befriended a lot of the artists that ended
mm-hmm.
up coming to feature on my album. And when I called them and sent them the music and all that kind of stuff, sometimes, I guess, mostly the reaction was really, really positive, and they wanted to be a part of the project. So I was really blessed and lucky about
mm-hmm.
the way it sort of happened.
That's it's a great story, because it's almost, I mean, not saying that it wasn't a rough journey, but, you know, you have some people that go out there that do try to do what you did and keep getting the door slammed in their face, but you managed to come out on top, and you've worked with some impressive people, Joel Madden, Lil' Kim, the Game. I mean, those are some hot people in the industry, and the music is really, really good. I love it a lot. I really love LA Girls, and so when I saw in your blog that they were supposed to start playing it out in California in September. Did they do that yet?
No, we're waiting for Kiss FM to hopefully pick it up, and then depending on the response we get from that, obviously with everything in the music business, it's been a delay. So
mm-hmm.
if they do start playing it, hopefully within the next few weeks, depending on the response, then we'll push it further from there. But right now, my song with Game and Lil' Kim is out, and it's being played in all the southern territories, and it's doing pretty well. So and also in the East Coast, I think it's just got picked up in New York on
Power.
Oh, good,
good.
So so it's starting to do pretty well and gain some momentum. So.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing it on my own, and I haven't submitted to any of the labels, because I got some horrific sort of offers initially from the labels, and I decided I declined, and whether it was,
mm-hmm.
whether it's the right thing or not, I just didn't want to be bound to being their slave, you know. And so I'm waiting
yeah.
to hopefully gain some success on my own, and then at that point I can get a little bit more of a reasonable deal to get more exposure in the long run.
Right. No, well, that's a smart thing to do, really. I mean, if you think about it, because once a record label locks you in, you're pretty much screwed until all that comes over, you know, and it's hard to get out of.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a lot of artists in that situation. I mean, they get signed and you know, they have high hopes and expectations, and then their albums don't even get, they just get shelved, basically, and they never get to come out, and they're stuck for at least a few years of their lives, you know, where they could be creating, and they get stifled. So it's a common occurrence, and then they get dropped by their labels more and more nowadays, because labels don't want to take risks unless they're almost 99% sure that there's going to be success. So
right.
with the state of the music industry. So it's a tough
mm-hmm.
time for musicians, and, you know, I definitely respect all the musicians out there that are trying to do it on their own, and I sympathize with the ones that are stuck in the label situation.
Right, right. When is King Amongst Men due to be released? Are you not dealing with any distributors? So I guess that's a
it's
not a good question since we're not.
It's funny because I've started working on a project with my band, which is a little bit more rock influenced,
mm-hmm.
and it sounds kind of a little bit more Linkin Park meets Foo Fighters. And it's
okay.
Really, really good stuff. It's just a little bit in a different lane. And it seems that we're going to get fingers crossed, we're going to get a decent record deal with the band. And then from there, I thought I could use the momentum to come out with my own stuff and use the same distributors.
Okay.
So it's a long-term journey. And I'm just, in the meantime, I'm making, you know, at least for myself, I'm making 2-3 songs every week, producing stuff in my studio. And I've always got new material, so I'm not worried about it. And, you know, I think the features I have on my album are awesome. It's so great, eclectic, and such different diversity of people from Billy Idol to Robbie Williams to The Game.
Mm-hmm.
But the importance of it is now is that I'm just making great music and expressing myself as an artist rather than before I was being more commercial, sort of commercially driven and thinking, oh, if I get Snoop on my album, if I get this guy on my album, then it's going
right.
to do well. You know,
right.
It's great to have these people on the album, but it's not an absolute necessity.
Right, right.
So,
tell me, did you have any questions for Mams right now?
Yes, I do. When you shot the video LA Girls, and you work with the women that was now like Mila Kunis, That's Gonna Be So Fame, and also Kelly Carlson from Nip/Tuck, and of course Carmen Electra. Did you meet these women before you shot the video, or was it the first time you met them on the set?
No, I'd met them before, either through friends, through mutual friends, or I'd met them sort of on my own. And just asked them and pitched them the idea, and they were all pretty cool about it, you know.
Yeah, you got real lucky. You had three gorgeous women, you know, in that video. I mean, come on. I mean, who could not be in the video with Carmen Electra? Come on.
I know. You got to watch the director's cut with a shower scene. I'm holding that one back.
Okay.
Hey, not fair. I'm spiritual, but I'm not that spiritual.
I hear you, baby.
Look, for crying out loud, you're a man already. Come on. Spiritual or not, you're still a man. Come on.
Exactly.
Call it is what it is, okay? No need to be shy around me. Don't worry about it. Do you write all the tracks yourself?
In terms of the production on King Amongst Men, a lot of them I brought in producers like Scott Storch, Rodney Jerkins,
right.
Little John. But now I produce all my own stuff, and in terms of writing lyrics, I always write my own stuff, and I write for other artists as well. But I've really got the hang of playing on my keyboard now, and I'm producing some really good stuff, and it's so rewarding making that stuff. I mean, I didn't know I could sing. I'm not per se the best singer in the world, but
right.
I'll get an idea in my head and I'll just record it on my cell phone and go into the studio and lay it down on, you know. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Just get an idea on your cell phone, just lay it down the track in the studio. That's nice.
Yeah, exactly.
Mhm. Now, just by reading your blogs on MySpace, I mean, it really shows how deeply appreciative you are of your fans, and you're very candid and you're very open. I don't know if you've heard, we talked about this yesterday, Tony. How does the news strike you that Ringo Starr basically sent out a video and warned, that was the word he used, warned all his fans not to send him any more fan mail because he is just too damn busy to be bothered with it. And anything he gets from now on will just simply be ignored.
Right. Basically, it's from now until October 20th. And after October 20th, he's not taking anything. He's not taking fan mail, taking emails, whatever. What do you think of that, Mims?
You know, I'm shocked because it's the first time I heard that. I guess I've been locked up for two weeks, so, you know, I haven't been in touch with what's going on in the outside world too much. But I'm really shocked. I think... I'm a big fan of the Beatles, and
mm-hmm.
wow. I mean, without being able to connect with so many people, that's the beauty of music. If I connect with 100 people, I'm so grateful. If I can make someone, if I can alter someone's mood just by putting a cool beat in their car and they can dance and have a good time, or if some of my lyrics have some kind of connection with someone and it resonates and it can change the way they feel, even in that moment, it's so rewarding. It's unbelievable. So I love hearing from fans. I love hearing from anybody who's influenced or moved by my stuff. And it's, you know, of course, if I was Ringo Starr and I was getting the quantity of fan mail, I probably wouldn't get around to reading as, you know, all of the mail, but I'd set aside an hour, 2 hours a day or whatever, like I do with my MySpace page. I get back to everybody. I set aside my time, even if it's just an hour or 45 minutes, and I write back to everybody. So I think he should do that, and I think it's very rude for him to come out and just tell people to stop writing to him. I think it's very, you know, shows he's got no gratitude.
Right.
So I don't
for
know
years
what's going on.
And years of support, that's the thing that kicked me.
And
it was
they
like,
make
here you are, someone from one of the most famous groups in all history of music, mm-hmm. and he put out a video and said, I warn all of you to stop sending me mail. I was like, he's warning people? What's he going to do if they do send it to him? I mean, it was just like, what are you warning everybody about? You don't want to open your mail? Don't open your mail. You don't have to go out and throw out a video
it's
everybody
arrogant.
And their mother to see. That was just really classless.
It's the ego. Sometimes it takes over, and I guess he's been such an icon for so many years that maybe he's forgotten where he came from, and, you know, you need to always have one foot on the ground in any business, especially if you become successful, because that's such a... to me, being successful is a material thing. It's great, but if you're truly successful, I mean, success, if you look at some of the biggest artists now, the young ones who make it really, really early on, they have so many problems, and, you know, there's examples you see out there like Britney that you sympathize with, and
right.
other young girls who make it quickly and get into the wrong circles and substance abuse and all that kind of stuff. It's because they don't stay grounded, and it's really sad. It's just that as successful as they are materially
mm-hmm.
and to the outside world, what's going on inside is so neglected, and it's so
mm-hmm.
easy to be distracted by your own fame and by your own kudos, by people around you telling you how good you are, that you don't think that you need to address it. But deep down, when you sit down and put your head on a pillow and you're on your own and you're not on any substances or anything, you
Absolutely.
Become pretty miserable.
Right,
so,
right, right.
That's the neglect. That's why inner work, any kind of spiritual work, I'm not talking religion or being, you know, fanatical about anything, but just
right.
giving yourself an hour a day just to sit in silence and breathe and be in touch with who you are is such a valuable thing. And it's not weird. It's not crazy. I mean, I've done the craziest things and myself, so I'm not like all about, you know what I mean? I'm not going to preach to anybody, but it's just that if Ringo Starr meditated for an hour a day for 2 weeks, I bet you he would take that statement back.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like you're a holy roller. It's just a statement of fact. People who meditate are generally more peaceful people, and because it does make you face yourself. I honestly tried to meditate, but I talk so much in my head, I can't. I can't meditate,
at least 30 minutes a day, but an hour, it would be too on for me.
You know, it's
30 minutes is fine. I'm in the zone for 30. After 30 minutes, I'm in a peaceful mood through all the day.
That's great. You know, that's great. I mean, it's 30 minutes, 20 minutes, whatever it is. If you just set aside that time for yourself and go inside, it just puts everything in perspective. And it doesn't give importance to things that, like, oh, my girlfriend called me this, and my ego is going to take over and let me respond in the most negative way and say this back and say that. You know, it just
right.
puts things into perspective, and it doesn't give importance to irrelevant things in your life. That's
right.
all
right.
to me.
Yeah,
Absolutely.
it's
Absolutely.
A goal of mine, but, you know, I talk so much verbally and in my head that I just don't think there's room for it, truthfully.
There is absolutely room for everybody. I bet you I could hang in there with you with talking. I can out-talk a lot of people, too.
Probably. As, you know, my time is usually when my kids are at school, but then it gets other things get involved. And then the minute I think I have peace and quiet and I'm starting to get somewhere, I hear somebody whacking on the door. Mom, where's my socks? Mom, where's my shoulder pads? And it's like, oh, reality's back.
Yeah, I saw you got two very cute kids on your Facebook, right?
Oh, yes, I do. Thank you.
Yeah, I saw the pictures. They're gorgeous. I got one daughter myself.
Oh, do you really? How old is she?
She's 4 years old. She's beautiful.
Aww.
Extremely musical. She knows every song from all the musicals, and like Oliver Twist and stuff like High School Musical now, of course, she's into.
Oh, yeah. See, my little guy, the 7-year-old, he's into all that. My older one is more into the rapper thing, of course, you know. He does all that stuff, but the little one, he won't do it in front of anybody, but you can like peek through the doors or whatever. He'll pull out a microphone and he'll do all the dances to High School Musical and Camp Rock and all that stuff. So I told him, you should really think about Tyler, man. We can do a little video and send it to somebody. You're cute enough.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens, whatever. But, yeah, they keep me so busy, so busy. I wish I had a little girl because I spoil my nieces unbelievably because, you know, boy stuff, I'm just so over it. But when I get a girl in my midst, I'm like, okay, let's go shopping. Let's go do your hair. Let's go do that. So I envy you on that.
Well, yeah, but I've always got the teenage years to look forward to, which I don't know what to expect. But I know everyone's telling me that, you know, if karma exists, then for all my sins, she's going to be, you know, she's going to be a heartbreaker. And I told her she's not allowed to date until she's 30. So we'll see.
Well, you know what? Being that my oldest is going to be 16 in December, I don't think it matters one way of gender, boy or girl. It's a difficult age, period. And it started for me at 12. And somehow they wake up on that day, and it's like they're completely different people. And I have a niece who's 14, and she's the same way. It started at the age of 12. My sister-in-law told me she woke up, and she was like a whole nother person. And they're demanding. They're definitely your sins do come back to haunt you, because I'll tell you, my 16-year-old is giving me a run for my money. So I don't need a girl for that. He's giving me a run for my money.
I can imagine. I mean, yeah, but I definitely want one boy as well at some point. So it's just
when, and I'll ship him over. I'll ship him over.
Deal.
You should have some practice first.
Deal.
I should be gray at 38. Trust me.
You're not alone, Joanne. I have a 14-year-old niece too, and she is very demanding too.
Yeah, girls are crazy. They certainly are. But boys are just as bad. There's really no difference. I'm sorry. You know, people say girls are harder than boys, but I don't believe that. I think it's really equal. As far as the difficulty, it's just different issues. You know.
Oh, yeah. So. I mean, my little girl at 4 years old knows exactly how to wrap me around her finger. So she gets whatever she wants. So.
Oh,
but
yeah,
I know.
So is my 14-year-old niece, ma'am. my 14-year-old niece on her mother.
Oh, gosh. Been there, done that with both of these kids. I know. My 7-year-old knows how to guilt me into anything. I mean, I literally could have $1.13 in change to my name, and he'll just look at me and he'll be like, Ma, I really wanted that candy bar in the store. And I'm like, Tyler, I got a dollar. And he's like, but what about for your little baby boy? And I'm like, oh, okay, fine. And I'll just give up all my change. You know, it's just, they know how to
do it.
That's
so funny.
They
know. They do.
I mean, I'll definitely go, with nothing for these kids. So, yeah, they do have that way. And then when they get older, it's a whole other story. You want to throw them through a wall sometimes, but, you know, you restrain yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyhow, that's great. I'm glad to hear that. What's your daughter's name?
Misha.
Oh, what a pretty name. Oh, gosh, I'm jealous already.
Yeah.
Okay. So now, speaking of fans, have you had any type of crazy fan encounter, good or bad?
I have. I've had two encounters that come to mind. One was a hot girl who, you know, is always a nice thing. You know, she was really attractive and everything else. And she got to LA and she asked to come to a show and everything else. So she came to a show And then she kind of wouldn't leave me alone, you know. And somehow, I guess she knew a mutual friend, so she kept calling and texting and calling and texting until I almost had to change my number. I candidly told her to you know, back off a little
back
bit. Because my girlfriend's crazy, and my girlfriend will kick her butt, and she'll kick my butt for someone else texting me, even if it's not my fault, you know.
Right.
So. No, so that was one, and then the other one was a guy, actually, who just kept following me around off to the show. Wherever we went, he'd turn up and just stare, and that was kind of freaky, but it didn't lead to anything more after that evening, so.
Right.
Nothing
now, I'm going to ask this question, because I'm assuming that I had permission when I got my request. Tell me about the infamous Jesse Metcalf punch.
Of course.
Heard around the world.
Yeah, that night, and that's something I've been working on. See, I was someone who left home at 16. I was always, you know, I was always sort of pretty streetwise. And if somebody says something and they imply that they want to fight you, I would go for it. And if somebody said something that would insult my girlfriend or insult me, it would, you know, that I would react to it and think, okay, this guy needs a smack in the face or whatever. And I wouldn't hold any grudge against them. It would be like, you know, back home, you'd hit someone because they said something,
then
and then I'd say, let's have a beer together. It's cool, you know, like you shake hands.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not really like that anymore these days. And also, I've realized that it's pretty ignorant behavior on my part to react like that as quickly as I have in the past. So I wouldn't do that again today. But back then, that was the frame of mind I was in, and he insulted my girlfriend, he insulted me, and he was really cocky, and I just kind of walked away. And then if you see the video, you can see where it cuts out to the punch. He taps me on the shoulder and turns me around, and that's where it cuts. See, so you don't see the in-between of what happens. You just see me punching him in the face. So it looks like I'm the bad guy, and I'm just hitting him for nothing. But he actually, you know, he started shouting, you know, it's on, and all that kind of stuff. So I thought, okay, we're going to have a fight now, so... That's when I hit him, and that was the end of it. I mean, it was kind of a blessing in disguise because it got me a lot of exposure, although it was not exactly what I'd like to be known for. You know what I mean? So it's fading away. I mean, people aren't taking it that seriously. It wasn't. I saw him in the gym a few months ago, and he was cool, and he just said, "I don't want any trouble." I said, "Oh, I don't want any trouble either." I shook his hand, sort of thanked him.
Hey,
you got me some good exposure, so.
See, I mean, truthfully, Alessandra told me about it. I had no idea about it, and she sent me the clip to the video because I had no idea what she was talking about. So that was the first time I saw it, but that's why I felt comfortable asking you. Otherwise, I would never have gotten into anything like that.
Oh, it's fine. I mean, I'll talk to you about anything. Feel comfortable asking me whatever you want.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to hear that because we like to talk on this show. So that's why I asked, and I'm sure that's not what you want to be known for. But no, I'm glad to hear that. I mean, when you're based on the way that you grew up and the like, of course you got to be street smart and ready to defend yourself. I mean, you know what? Not for nothing. I'm 38, and yeah, I'm a girl, but I have three brothers and a sister, and we didn't necessarily grow up the same way, but we were always taught to defend ourselves in any means necessary. And you know, I did myself at 16 years old. That landed me in jail for mutilating some girl's face because she punched my sister. You know, and my sister at the time was 13, and this girl, swear to God, was like an Amazon. She was like 6 foot something, and she knocked my sister in between the eyes and gave her two black eyes. And my dad was like, "You better get out there and kick that girl's ass and don't come home." So, yeah, me and my brother and my boyfriend sat there and plotted this whole takeover of this Catholic high school in Yonkers, New York, and I attacked this girl beyond knees. That was the last fight I ever had. And I'm 38 years old, and now I look at my kids and my 16, I'm like, you know what, Christian, you better walk away. Don't do the same things. And I try and teach him from experience. I mean, I would never, ever do that now, but you do learn from it and hope to move on and be a somewhat of a better person.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've you know, the thing I used to do, and all my friends would make fun of me for it, somebody would say something and be a smart ass and everything else, and then I would respond, you know, by beating them up a little bit or kicking their butt or whatever, but not just lightly, because I mean I train and I fight as a hobby, you know, pretty much 5 times a week, so it's not something I'm out to prove to anyone, you know.
Right.
So if someone became a bit of a smart aleck or whatever, I would do that, and then I'd feel bad, so I'd say, look, I'm really sorry, let's have a drink, kind of thing, you know. But which it doesn't justify it, and it's not a good thing, and you know, it's still not a good thing. But today, I'd like to think that it would be only in an emergency situation that I would use
mm-hmm.
any kind of violence to defend a situation or myself. I mean, if someone wants to say something, I don't think I would react the same way I did back then. And
right.
But, you know, who knows? Sometimes in the heat of the moment, you get passionate. And
it can happen.
Yeah.
It can
yeah.
happen. And especially when it's something, it's someone that you care about. I mean, I know for me, it would to trigger me like that, it would definitely be about my kids. You
exactly.
can't come to me nowhere near about my kids, because so help you God, I'll end up in jail. You know, I mean, that's the one thing that's totally off limits, you know, when it comes to stuff like that. But, and, you know, I've gotten into some really heated discussions, but I've never gotten physical with anybody about it. But, yeah, the one person comes up to me and smarts off about my kids, then that's a whole other issue. Then the whole
thing
comes right back out of me, and we're done. You know, it's over.
It would have been on. It would be on.
It's on, exactly. No, I agree with you, of course. You know, my daughter's my everything. If anyone messes with her, it's on.
Oh,
but,
yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, like,
same thing with my sister. Same thing with my sister and her daughter.
Yeah, yeah. You know, when it comes to family, you know, you want to take care of them and everything else. But it's realistically, if we sort of, if someone says something, you know what? The best way to even deal with it verbally, if someone wants to verbally say, look, you're this, you're that, your friends are this, or your daughter's that. Now I've even come to the conclusion, it's like, all right, let them say it. Why should I take their crap on board for myself? That's
mm-hmm.
that's like someone offering you a gift of dog poo or whatever. I don't know if I can swear on this show.
You most certainly can.
Okay, so dog shit. So that they wrap up dog shit and give it to you as a gift. You're going to say, oh, that's nice, but you can keep it. I don't want it. Thank you. And you just
right.
move on. And that way, honestly, they are already hurting themselves with their intentions towards you. And not to get too spiritual, but it's a law of nature. It's a scientific thing. When you have negative intentions towards someone, immediately you're hurting yourself. So let
mm-hmm.
them do that, and you know, the universe will take care of it. But if someone comes to physically harm your kid, then it's a different thing. If someone comes
Absolutely.
To put their hands on your family, or to harm or harm you or your property or your, whatever, then
it's
or
on.
Family, then it's on. But, you know, I think if someone just comes and verbally says, it's just because they got their own problems. So you just feel sorry for them and try and have as much compassion as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying all this fresh out of that 10 days away. But probably in 3-4 days, you'll be hearing about the next incident of me punching, I don't know who, another pretty boy. Here in Hollywood.
You know, there's an old saying, is agree to a disagree and let it go.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, I tell my kids all the time, well, mainly the older one, because the 7-year-old just really is not into any of that. But I say, kill him with kindness. I'm like, gosh. I said, you know what? I said, this one can say this, that one can say that. And you just said, look at them and be like, oh, okay, how was your day? And they're going to be so bewildered and puzzled, like, what the hell's wrong with this kid that I'm sitting here cursing him out and he's saying me, what's up? I was like, yeah, I'm telling you, kill him with kindness, and it drives him away every time.
Totally. I mean, look, the ultimate story of compassion is obviously Jesus at the stake. He's still
mm-hmm.
saying, forgive these people, they don't know what they do, forgive them. And at the end of the day, I love all of these people, and I've got nothing but compassion for them. And he's being
right.
killed, and he's in excruciating pain. You know, like, whatever the facts are of that story, of course, I wasn't there at the time, but it's such a beautiful
mm-hmm.
story, and it's such a great lesson for everybody, because it's just about compassion. So when people come at you with ignorance, you just show them love and compassion, and it kind of hurts. It's the best weapon you can use.
It certainly
they
is.
They go away confused as hell, thinking, what just happened?
What did I do? All right,
yeah.
That didn't work out for me here.
Yeah.
So tell me, what is a typical day in the life of Mams?
All right. I wish there was a typical day, and I'd feel a little bit more, you know, comfortable in some kind of routine. I mean, I guess I would say my ideal day would be that I wake up around 8 a.m. and I'd like to say that I probably meditate for an hour at 8 till 9. Then I fit in an hour of boxing and an hour of cage fighting, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, at a place called Legends in L.A. And then I'll go to the gym for about 45 minutes. That's my workout done. And then I'll hit the studio, and depending if I've got a client that I'm writing for or producing for, or I might be working with my band or doing my own stuff, but that's my office, basically, my studio. Mm-hmm. And then I'll fit in another hour of meditation at some point later on in the afternoon, and then have sort of from around 6 p.m. till 7, I'll watch my TiVo'd Simpsons, because I watch that every day. I need my dose of the Simpsons.
Okay.
And then I'll
love a cow, man.
Yeah. I'll either see my girlfriend or some hang with some of my friends, but usually I'm in bed probably by 10, 11 o'clock, so I'm really not, you know, I'm way more boring than I was even a year and a half ago. You know, I'd be out till my routine back then would be wake up at 4 p.m., go on a date with maybe 2-3 different people who thought they were coming on a date with me on their own. and just, you know, be in a large group of just crazy people who love to party, and we'd all hit the nightclub, and then after the nightclub, I was living in a hotel, actually, so it was a really crazy lifestyle. After that, I would probably go to the casino and play poker till about 9 a.m., 8 a.m., and then go to sleep and start that all over again. So,
wow.
Pretty extreme difference.
It certainly is. I mean, I was just going to say, like, what is it that you like to do on your off time and your downtime? Do you have any hobbies or other than boxing and cage fighting?
Other than that, yeah, I do read. I read a lot. I like to watch movies, and just I think the great thing that I have in my life that I'm so grateful, the things I do on a daily basis are my hobbies. I mean, I do everything I do. I'm so blessed that I can choose whatever I want to do. So, you know, if I'm boxing, it's because I choose to and I have a great time doing it. If I'm in the studio, it's because I love to do that. So it's not work per se, because, you know, you think, oh, some jobs I've had, it's like wake up and you're like, oh, man, I got to put this shirt on and answer to someone and all that kind of stuff. And I love my job. So it's not really a job. It's just a pleasure to be doing what I'm doing. So
I think
other than that, obviously, when I get to see my kid, that's the most fun in the whole world.
Right.
And I think that's it. I'm pretty square.
Have you taken her to Disneyland yet?
I have, but she doesn't like it. She's not. I took her last year, and she got really scared. She didn't like, you know, she didn't like the puppets. She got freaked out by a Small World. And you know what? I got scared in there, too. It's scary. If you look at the 1970s puppets in there, they're pretty damn scary. They're looking at you all evil. And I don't know.
Yeah,
I
they're like
the
little creepy
dogs.
Yeah.
And even Goofy in that suit. You know, he's kind of scary if you look at him. Next time you go to Disneyland, check him out. It's like
I'll be there next month. Yeah, it can get a little creepy. But is she into the Disney princesses or anything like that yet?
Oh, listen, princesses is what she's all about. She compares princesses, and you know what she does to me? She says, "Daddy, I don't want to speak to you today." And she's got a really posh English accent. She's like, "Daddy, I don't want to speak to you today." I'm like, "Oh, why not, princess?" She's like, "I want to speak to Princess Jasmine, so I've got to do my Princess Jasmine voice. Then I've got to do my Cinderella voice. Then I've got to do my Sleeping Beauty. And I've got to make sure there's some kind of discerning difference between each princess. And I'm not going to do any of my princess voices on the air at all, so don't ask."
Oh, come on. All right,
hey,
I won't put you through that.
I've got a reputation here.
That's only something that should stay between a father and her daughter. That's not for everybody and their mother to hear.
No, exactly.
I totally agree with you there. I wouldn't embarrass you like that.
I know every little girl, not only in the country, but around the world, wants to dream to be a princess, like a princess be Princess Jasmine or Snow White or Cinderella, whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm. That's so cute, though. That's good. That's cute. You should take her. I don't know what Disneyland is like out in California, but I know over in Florida, they have special And she's a little older, too, so it might be easier. I know when my kids are small, Disney freaked them out, too, the puppets and whatnot, but as they get older, they like it. In the castle, in Cinderella's castle, they have a Disney princess breakfast or a Disney princess lunch where she'll be able to sit and get dolled up like a princess, and she'll be able to go have a meal with all of the characters.
Wow.
My brother took my niece the last time they were down in Florida, and he said she's seven, and she's such a girly girl. He said it was just amazing.
Yeah, now that she's older, she'll probably won't be that scared of the puppets, hopefully. But she had a princess party for her fourth birthday just gone in August, so everyone who came had to dress up as a princess. It was very cute.
Aw, how cute. Now, is she in London?
She's in London with her mum, yeah, and she comes out here, or I go and see her every couple of months and stay out there for a bit. So, you know, it's really tough for me, but we speak every day at least, and you know, I see her as often as I can. So.
Well, yeah, I can imagine. That's got to be rough, a daddy being away from his little girl.
Yeah, definitely.
God, I know I'm 38, and I can't get rid of my father. He's up in Buffalo every time he gets a chance. From Florida,
Yeah.
Never goes away.
Yep, I speak to my mom. If I don't speak to her three or four times a week, she gets real mad at me, so.
Yeah, I talk to my friends every day.
Yeah, my mom's like, anyway, she checks up on me like she checks on me basically every 2 days. You know, if I don't call her for 2 days, she comes up and checks me. How are you doing, Tony? I said, how are you doing? Oh, I'm fine.
Yeah, exactly.
I have very hands-on parents. There's five of us, and my father, he's 63 years old, and he's very hands-on to this day. I moved to Buffalo, New York from Florida back in July, and he's already been up here three times. So I mean,
wow.
He's just like that, you know. My dad. Anyway, tell me about the charity work that you're doing also and how you chose these specific charities, the Kids Company and a place called Home.
Well, they provide shelter and a place to hang out for kids who are abused or going through a lot of difficult times at home. And, mm-hmm. I mean, my upbringing wasn't bad. I was, you know, I was in a home which was, it was a nice home and everything else. I just didn't see eye to eye with my father, and he was, you know, he's an old school, old fashioned guy who take off his belt and his slippers every now and then. I mean, every now and then means pretty much every day, but it wasn't, it wasn't the worst upbringing or anything. It's just like when I was 16, I was like, you know what, I'm out of here. But I could totally relate to a lot of these kids who are in much, much worse circumstances, mm-hmm. and giving them that kind of place where they can hang out and get creative and be encouraged to be creative. It's so important because it reflects on their future in such a massive way. I mean, even having this retreat that I just came back from brought up all kinds of suppressed memories that I didn't even realize existed. And mm-hmm. rather than having to cure all kinds of stuff from being a kid, prevention is always a much stronger method. So my goal is, both those charities are amazing for that, and my goal is with my girlfriend, who can get some exposure because, you know, she's an actress and a singer too, and she's, you know, she's in the public eye. So we're gonna open up a place called Children of the Universe, which we're working on right now, and it's universal. It's basically a schooling system, and it's gonna take us a little bit of time, but we're gonna provide shelter and an education system which incorporates everything that will be hopefully acceptable to the national education boards in here and also in England. But on top of that, an hour's lesson every day of a spiritual sort of, how can I say, maybe a guide to really live, something really useful for kids to be brought up with, you know, to understand themselves, to not be affected by insults or by molding or by control and all that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. but to be encouraged to be playful and relaxed and not develop anxieties. I mean, look, everybody, I'm around, a lot of my friends, people, they're either on, you know, there's so much substance abuse, there's so much Xanax and so much stuff for anxiety. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. I mean, friends of mine, and Xanax, like they're going out of business. It's just... I don't. What a beautiful future we have ahead of us if the kids can grow up with love and really, really be centered and truly find inner happiness growing up rather than having to cure themselves from all the bullshit that they're fed when
right.
they're kids, you know? Because what happens is our minds are conditioned in a certain way, and it's so difficult to overcome one's own ego and recondition our minds and retrain our minds. So rather than having to retrain, why not train kids' minds from a young age to
right,
be
from
natural,
the beginning.
Like they're supposed to be, fearless, you know? Not,
yeah.
not have so many fears attached. Not because we manifest what happens. Whatever goes on inside internally is what's going to reflect externally. And that's why I look at the state of our world right now, politically. I mean, if
mm-hmm.
we could send every politician before they become a qualified politician to do these kind of works, believe me, we'd have a very different world, you know?
Absolutely.
Our priorities are completely messed up. It's all about making millions of dollars and buying big homes and big cars. But I tell you one thing from experience, I've made money and lost money 3 times in my life. And
really?
It's, yeah, and it's never, and I'm, you know, I'd be a big gambler on the stock market, and I'd trade big, big, big margins. And I've been wiped out. And honestly, I can say the wealthiest I've ever been, flying private planes, hiring the biggest yacht in Saint-Tropez and being surrounded by bikini-clad women, most beautiful,
mm-hmm.
this, that, and the other, having all the dream cars I ever even thought about, you know, growing up as a kid, never thought it would be possible. Having all that stuff is great. It's fun. It's awesome. But the problem is our egos sometimes force us to believe that that's what happens is that stuff ends up owning you, you know, and that's
right.
because the way society is geared through advertising, through we're brainwashed constantly that this is what you have to do to live the, you know, the dream and the standard. That's not the dream, because I can point out more miserable rich people than you can imagine. You know, I mean, I know a lot
right.
of wealthy people, and are they truly happy? I'd say a lot of them aren't. They escape
right.
constantly. Whether actually wealth can be a massive obstruction to true happiness, because it builds your ego so much, and if you don't have the ability to conquer your ego, then you can't really get to your core self.
This is true, and you know what? That's really important to instill in children, because especially with so much peer pressure out there. I mean, my kids were not raised on name brands, and they probably never will be. And I try and teach them, you know, don't want what others have, just be, you know, take care of what you got, you know, and you'll always be successful and rich in that manner, because you know what, we're piss poor broke, you know what I'm saying? And they just, that's something that I had to make sure that they realized we don't have all that kind of stuff. And you have to teach them from a younger age. So when they do get older, if they do reach their goals, you know, they've achieved everything they had, plus they're happy. I don't
yeah.
believe people who have money are happy. I really, really don't.
Look, anything that you think will make you happy that's outside of yourself, whether it's
mm-hmm.
someone else's love, whether it's a bigger car, a bigger house, or whatever it is, it's only going to last for a little while. I remember when
right.
I first made my money, I was 23 years old, and, you know, I just left being a bouncer at a nightclub, and I got into business with some really, really wealthy Arab sheikhs, and I basically did some real estate deals with them and everything. And overnight, I became a millionaire. First thing I did, I went and got myself a Ferrari from the James Bond set. I can't remember which movie it was, but it was a blue Ferrari 360, 23-year-old kid, you know, and I went crazy. I mean, it wasn't that long ago, but...
Right.
I kissed this Ferrari every night before I went to bed. I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but the porter in my building would see it on the camera, me kissing the Ferrari, and make fun of me about it. I mean, it lasted for maybe a month of me really patting myself on the back. Wow, I got a Ferrari. Wow, now I need a Lamborghini, and I get a Lamborghini. Now I need a better Ferrari. Now I need a better this. So it doesn't... Now I need a helicopter. Now I need a plane. It never ends. You know, and then you're going to want to buy your own spaceship eventually. So it's, you're always going to want more. It's a bottomless pit, and it's a complete illusion. It's awesome to have these things and have the luxury of comfort that finance provides you. I knock on wood, thank God I've accumulated this. I'm self-made. I've done my own thing, so I can build my own schedule. I'm not forced to do anything that I don't want to do, and I'm so grateful
right.
for that. But if it's not always that way, I'll still find happiness looking within. You know, it's not, because the problem is, if your happiness is conditional on all that stuff, you're going to be 10 times more miserable when you don't have it, you know?
Absolutely.
So
that's
it's
so true.
But I
mean, I get a thrill out of going into the Walmart when I have some extra money just to buy this kid a pair of extra sneakers. I couldn't imagine. You know what I'm saying? It's like if people only realized, you know, certain people with money, you know what I mean? It's like, okay, this one has so much money and he just bought his 2-year-old daughter a $4,000 dress that they just had to have for a party. I choke when I see stuff like that. I'm like, are these people serious? God, $4,000 can pay my medical bills. $4,000 can do this, and they're buying a 2-year-old a dress. Are you serious?
Listen, I could tell you
when I see stuff like that.
I could tell you some stories when I first got to L.A. that would make you cringe. I mean, I still cringe. The stuff I did when I'd go to the clubs and order, you know, that whole hip-hop lifestyle of ordering, I don't know how many bottles. I had some crazy bills that I look at now, I'm like, oh, my God, I was completely nuts, you know? So
right.
I've done that stuff. Spending unnecessarily and being ungrateful for what you have is not, you know, it's not a good thing. But I'm not saying that it's a bad thing to be wealthy. I think it's a great thing. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just there's way too much focus on that. I think if people set out to really be happy and follow their hearts and follow what they're passionate about and
right.
listen to their hearts and their bodies rather than just live inside their heads, then
right.
that's the right formula. And there's no reason, whatever you're passionate about, if it's writing, if it's you know, being on air, presenting a radio show, if it's owning a restaurant and making food for people,
mm-hmm.
if you realize our core, every human being has a few things in common. We're all born and we all die. You know, no matter who you are, you're born and you're gonna die. It doesn't matter how rich you are or what you are. So we've got
right.
that in common. The other thing we have in common is it's all of our destiny to evolve into and go towards enlightenment. I mean, to me, this
mm-hmm.
is my own personal belief, and that's getting to the state of pure love where Jesus was, where Buddha was, or where Moses, or, you know, all these people that you hear about in history.
Right.
That's all of our shared internal destiny, whether it happens this lifetime or another or whatever. And then the other goal is to serve humanity with whatever talents that you develop or that you're blessed with in your life. And as a byproduct of that, there's so much success, and the universe kind of takes care of you way, way more than if you just have that selfish, I just want to be rich because I want to get chicks. I just want to be rich because I want to get chicks. All that kind
right,
of stuff.
Right.
It's great to have that with a territory. It's fine. But if you truly, truly do whatever you do to help even one person, two people, three people, whatever it is, you know, or hundreds of people or thousands, that's what it's really all about. That's what life is. You know, you're serving humanity because we're all
right.
essentially so connected. It's ridiculous to have these wars and all this craziness, and the priorities that we're taught are important. It's all in a messed up order. So if you start from a young age teaching your kids as a responsible parent and putting them into such educational systems where they're encouraged to be, if they want to be artists, they're encouraged to do that. Don't be more like Tommy. Just be like you, whoever you are.
Mm-hmm.
Be yourself and be encouraged to look into yourself and really grow from that space, you know, of love and kindness, compassion, and all that kind of stuff. God, I really sound like some kind of
Well, you know what? It's a nice, intelligent conversation, and it's really nice to hear someone like you who has been exposed to the other side, you know, and what you really feel about it. So, no, don't feel like you're going overboard at all on spirituality or anything like that, because you're not. It's a really nice thing to hear, because you've been on that side that some of us will probably never see. You know what I mean? So it's like a whole other viewpoint, and I completely respect it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I do. I mean, and I'm hardly, believe me, I'm no lecturer in this. I've got a long way to go. Like, I was honestly, the negative thoughts I was having when I was in that hall every day meditating for 10, 11 hours, there were people who were complete warriors there, you know, and they were down-to-earth, cool people, not weirdos with, like, you know, beads all over them or I don't know what. They
mm-hmm.
weren't. They were real down-to-earth, cool people, but they were just, it was so easy for them to do this, and it's practice makes perfect, but it's difficult to get to your final goal without a lot of hard work. And it is, like you say, even sitting down for half an hour, it's your mind plays tricks with you. It makes you think,
you know what,
I've got this to do. I've got that to do. It's more important. I could do this tomorrow. I'll do it another time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and your mind will constantly do that because it doesn't want to retrain itself. It's your ego messing with you saying, you know what, you don't have to do this. It's all bull, you know, but it's not. It's, you can find such an inner peace, and it's a radiant joy that's always there, and there's no opposite of it, you know, whereas with material stuff, you have happiness and you have sadness. You have money and then you go broke, so it's always an opposite, you know?
Right. No, that's a story in my life, boy, I'll tell you. We're just going to have to keep talking. You're going to have to be like my coach now, okay, because you're getting me pumped up. So I'm going to have to start sending you messages, and we'll start texting because I'm going to need it, okay?
Done deal.
I need somebody to kick me in the ass and push me forward, that's for sure. all right, well, you know what? That hour went by too damn fast. We are currently off the air. But you know what, man? I had such a pleasure talking to you. I mean, when King Amongst Men comes out, you have to come back and let me know what's going on and any new projects. I want to, you know, help you any way I can.
Joanne, I really appreciate it, and give your kids a big hug for me, and stay in touch with me. You're my Facebook friend now, so.
That's right, and I'm on your MySpace too. So
you're on my MySpace too. Okay, absolutely.
That's right. All right, ma'am. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Stardust.
Pleasure talking to you.
As well, man. Thank you. Appreciate it. God bless.
All of it.
Bye-bye. God bless.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, Tony, tomorrow night, Matt Borlenghi.
Yep, I'll be here.
All right, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Have a good night.
Night, you too.
Night.